topics that I would like to discuss today are, first of all, I'd like to do a brief introduction and review of the various constituency statements on the purpose of the contacts and who is, which we mentioned last week, hopefully limiting that to just a few minutes per constituency so we can get through it all in half an hour. And then I'd like to move to a discussion of, to a certain extent, a discussion that Ross has been pining for a few weeks, but I just want to briefly try to see if we can't have some useful discussion around the sort of scope of who is as a broad tool versus a relatively narrow tool focused around the registration activity. And I know that reflects a lot of the conversations that we've been having in the past, but I think maybe we can have a few specific questions within that context that might help us make that a fruitful conversation. So let me, does anyone else have anything they want to add or suggest to the agenda? Okay, great. So if that's the case, I think I'd like to start with the brief review of the various views on the purpose of the contacts within WHOIS, and that would be our original terms of reference, item number 2. I think we've had constituency statements from most of the constituencies, and what I'd ask for here is someone from each of the constituencies to provide a brief sort of 1 to 2 minute synopsis of the view, and then maybe a couple minutes of questions as well.
This is Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy?
Could you just read item number 2?
Item number 2 is, let me pull it up again. I think I know it off the top of my head, but I want to make sure I'm right about this. Except I can't find it. Item number 2 is, define the purpose of the registered name holder, technical, and administrative contacts in the context of the purpose of WHOIS and the purpose for which the data was collected. Use the relevant definitions from Exhibit C of the Transfers Task Force Report as a starting point. And that exhibit is kind of long, so I'm not going to read it right now, but I will quickly email out to the list the whole text of the Exhibit C. Okay. So I'd like to start with, we're going to just do this in alphabetical order of constituency name, and that starts us with the business constituency. David, could you give us a brief synopsis of the business constituency statement on this topic?
You know, I have to go back and look at it. I'm sorry, I've been rushing around on
something. Oh, no problem. We'll skip you over for a minute then, let's see what comes next. Intellectual property constituency?
Okay, this is Steve.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We start off by noting that there really isn't, that it is important to define these terms of registered name holder, technical contact, and administrative contact. Today, there's no consistency about how registrants populate these databases, and the fact that there is some definition in the transfers policy is, I'm sure, would be news to the vast majority of registrants. So it would be helpful to have a better and more common understanding of what you're supposed to, you know, how you're supposed to populate this database. We consider that the registered name holder ultimately should be the party ultimately responsible for use of the domain name, operation of the corresponding internet resource, and also the entity with authority to transfer the domain name registration to another party, and that making that information available will promote accountability and transparency and increase the overall reliability and security of the Internet. We think the technical contact should be the purpose of that is to help ensure operational stability, security, and global interoperability of the Internet. And then the administrative contact, we identify two purposes. First, to give the registrars a clearly identified, authorized voice of the registered name holder for purposes of managing the domain name, and to give other members of the public a clearly identified point of contact for issues regarding the content of the corresponding website or other Internet resource. This should be the person that has the authority to modify the content on the site or to accept legal process or other notifications concerning that content. And then we point out that there seems to be a contradiction, or at least an ambiguity, I guess, in the Transfers Task Force definition of administrative contact, because I think it refers both to the administrative contact being the authoritative point of contact, but then being secondary to the domain holder. So that's an ambiguity that perhaps should be clarified. That the domain holder, or the registered, I think the registered name holder, what is our registered name holder, has ultimate authority over the domain name, but the domain holder can designate the administrative contact as the authorized point of contact for managing the domain.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Anyone have questions for Steve about the IPC statement?
Yeah, I've got one question for Steve, please.
Go ahead, Russ.
Steve, a couple of times you referred to the purpose of these contacts to provide. You used some specific language around Internet resources and content. Could you repeat that just so I'm asking you the right question?
Yeah, I think
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Registered name holder is the party ultimately responsible for the use of the domain name and the operation of the corresponding website or other Internet resource. I think that's where I said Internet resource. I think we say corresponding website or other Internet resource a couple of times, because also the administrative contact is the point of contact for issues regarding the content of the website or other Internet resource.
Okay. And how do we know what those resources are? In other words, where's the scope of the responsibility defined?
This is what we suggest should be, if one were to define these terms, we suggest they be defined in this way. We point out at the outset that there really isn't a definition now, and we also sent out, as I think the task force asked us to do, asked all the user constituencies to do, we sent out a questionnaire about how registrants that are in our constituency anyway are populating database.
Mm-hmm.
And I just posted the results, which I'm not sure how much they tell us because there are so few responses, but at least it gives some indication as to how they populate this. Descriptively, I think people don't have any guidance. They're just doing, they're filling out they're filling these slots. We don't know how they're filling them, but if there is to be a more standardized or consistent definition, this is the one we propose.
So if we presume for a second that it's appropriate that we start tracking the link between domain names and content resources, wouldn't it also be appropriate that we enumerate these resources in some way, shape, or form?
Not necessarily.
Would that not be part of the record?
Not necessarily. I mean, there may not be a corresponding website or other Internet resource.
Well, the precedence on this is clear. As it relates to their responsibility to the DNS resources, those resources are enumerated. So I would assume if we're expanding the scope of resource that these contacts are responsible for, we would also enumerate those resources.
What the resources are?
I'm sorry?
For example, we use the phrase corresponding website or other Internet resource.
Right, right.
That we ought to define what other Internet resource.
No, I'm saying the precedent is very clear. We have enumerated Internet resources in there in the past. Those are the DNS name servers. If we're going to expand the scope, presuming again that this is appropriate, if we're going to expand the scope of the scope of resource to include things like content web servers, should we not also seek to enumerate those as well?
In the whois?
Yes.
We could. That's not what we're suggesting. We're suggesting that whatever those resources are, the party responsible, and that's going to obviously vary, the party responsible for them should, or in a position to manage them should be identified in whois.
But then without that enumeration, how do we know who's responsible for what?
Well, there may be more, because there's more than one resource involved, is that a situation where that would arise?
I'm not sure I understand the answer, but...
Okay, we may have to leave it there and
you don't have to, I mean, you don't need whois to tell you what the internet resources are. Let's take the example of one, I mean, the simple one, that where there is a website that corresponds to that domain name. So there's website, there's content on the website, and we're suggesting that the administrative contact should be the entity with authority to modify that content or accept notifications concerning that content.
So, Steve, maybe I could ask a clarifying question. Would it be your view then that if any internet sort of resources referenced in the zone file of that domain name, those would be the resources that the registrant would be, or the registered name holder would be responsible for?
I'm not sure of the answer to that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's clear, Jordan, that the IPC proposal is not very well thought out in this regard, so we should perhaps come back to it at a later point.
Well, I think this is an early discussion.
We'll wait to hear the registrar's proposal.
Yeah, exactly. This is an early discussion where we're just trying to get baseline views from the various constituencies. Any other questions for Steve? If not, I'd like to move on to the ISPs.
Okay. Pardon any background noise for my 2-year-old here. But I also had to go back to the document to refresh my memory. What we had stated is that for the registered name holder, we essentially think of that as the person who initiates the use of the domain, holds him or herself as having ultimate responsibility for everything associated with the domain, and essentially, I hate to use the word owner, but owner of the name that is associated with the domain. For technical contact, we propose that be the person who has responsibility for any security or interoperability issues. We also noted that's essentially the contact the ISPs seek to find first, and the person or the contact that we usually have the most interaction with for issues related to internet traffic or the domain in general. And then as far as the administrative contact went, we had some discussion as to whether that's really a different person at all or not. But we think of that as essentially the contact that's intended to be to address any business or legal issues associated with the domain.
Okay. Thanks, Maggie. Any questions for Maggie about the ISP statement? Okay. Maggie, you were a model of clarity. Thank you.
I'm not sure about that.
Kathy, would you like to talk about the NCUC position on this?
Sure. We took a slightly different approach. Given that Task 2 asks us to define the purpose of these contacts in the context of the whois, we went back to the purpose of whois and said the purpose that we set out that we thought was within, you know, the scope and the mission of ICANN was a technical purpose. And then we went through some of the reasoning that has been given us by some of the data protection commissioners who have commented, particularly the Article 29 Data Protection Working Party, which has all the data protection commissioners of the EU. It's established under Article 29 of the EU Data Protection Directive. And they said you really have to, under the Privacy Directive, you have to look at the not just the material you're publishing, but the material you're collecting. And if you're collecting personal data, it can't be, it has to be relevant and not excessive for the specific purpose. So we went through the context, rather than just defining what the purpose of the contacts were, we said, are they relevant? You know, the law says, you know, are these contacts relevant? And the technical context, we said, of course, was relevant, and that the transfers definition is very useful to us, the person responsible for the technical operations of the delegated zone. And the rest of the definition, the transfers. We said, this makes sense. We asked, is it generally personal data? And for certain individuals who are very technical, occasionally it is personal data, but for the vast majority of individuals and smaller non-commercial organizations, this was not personal data. It was their ISP or their registrar. So in our analysis, we agreed with the technical, with the transfers document on the definition of technical contact, and we agreed that it should be a piece of data that is collected. We then went to administrative contact and noted that under the transfers task force definition, this was specifically a contact who should be able to answer non-technical questions about the domain name registration and the domain name holder. So non-technical. So that didn't fit within our purpose of the WHOIS, which is a technical purpose. And then we looked further to see, is this data personal for individuals and smaller non-commercial organizations? And we found that it is often personal. We surveyed the members of the NCUC, and we found that very, very often this is personal data. It's somebody's name, their home address, their home telephone number, their personal email address. And we said, do we really need to collect this data within the scope of the WHOIS definition? And we said no. So rather than, you know, defining it or setting it out, we just said this is not data that should be collected. This is not relevant to the purpose of WHOIS, and it is excessive. So we shouldn't be collecting it and shouldn't be publishing it as part of WHOIS. Then we went to the registered name holder, and we looked at the transfers definition. And this is the legal entity who's holding the domain name, but not necessarily anyone responsible for anything technical. And so for us, this doesn't fit within the purpose of WHOIS. This is not a technical contact. When we surveyed our members, you know, their names are listed, their organizations are listed, but if you reach that contact, they're not going to be able to do anything on the technical side. They'll go back to their ISP or their registrar if there's a delegation type of issue or registration type of technical registration problem. So then it doesn't fit within the purpose of WHOIS, so then we went on to the next question, is it personal? And, of course, for our members and for individuals, we found that this data is almost always personal. This is an individual's name. This is a hobbyist name. This is a family website, and it's the family's name, their home address, their home phone number. And we decided that it is not relevant to collect this data for technical purposes, and it is excessive. So that we said you should not collect this. For WHOIS purposes, and certainly should not publish it for WHOIS purposes. So the summary, as you all know, is that the technical contact, we agreed with the transfers definition and thought that we should collect and publish this. The rest of it, we classified under business data, and it should be collected by the registrars as relevant to their business purposes, but not for WHOIS purposes.
Okay, so basically the view is that only the technical contact should be published in the WHOIS? Is that a fair summary?
Collect it and published in the WHOIS. There will be a later discussion of what we collect and perhaps don't publish.
Correct. For example, the registered name holder, I would imagine the registrar would almost have to collect that at some point in order to understand who they interact with.
I would think so. I guess the analogy that would be helpful is a lot of financial data is collected, but it's not collected for WHOIS purposes. Most registrars, as I understand it, collect a credit card. They'll collect whatever business address or home address may be useful to that credit card, which may be different from anything that's put into the WHOIS contacts. The registrant and some kind of administrative contact concept could also be collected similar to financial data. We don't consider the credit card part of the WHOIS data, and probably shouldn't consider registrant or administrative contact either. So registrars should be able to collect it if that's what they need for their business purposes.
Okay, but it wouldn't be published in the WHOIS, according to the NCUC position, is that correct?
Or even considered part of WHOIS data, just like
right.
We're not talking here about disclosure of credit cards.
Correct, okay.
It's not part of our discussion here.
Any other questions for Kathy?
Jordan?
Yeah, Ken?
Yeah, this is Ken. I'm going to have to drop off for about 10 or 15 minutes. I got a little minor emergency here. I'll be back on.
Okay, thanks, Ken.
Yeah, this is Steve. I had just a clarification. In terms of the data on which you're making the drawing the conclusions, for example, that the technical contact is often not a person, and the registered name holder, for example, usually is a person. What is your basis for what is the data on which you get that conclusion?
We did some surveys of our members. There was a discussion online, and also just kind of years of working with the field, years of working, my years as an attorney, and Milton's years of working with individuals and small non-commercial organizations.
But so Kathy, just to be clear, that view is based on the composition of the members of the NCUC, so it may be different if we were to look at the business registrants or another group of registrants. Is that correct?
Absolutely. But let me go back to the Article 29 Working Party opinion. This was February 2003, and it's quoted extensively in the NCUC backgrounder. And it says the registration of domain names by individuals raises different legal considerations than that of companies or other legal persons registering domain names. So there's a discussion that when an individual, again, Article 29, when an individual registers a domain name, it's clear that the identity and contact information should be known to his or her service provider, but there's no legal ground justifying the mandatory publication of personal data referring to this person. Our constituency may be a special case, and unfortunately ALAC is not on to talk about individuals, but it's a very special legal case that when we're dealing with personal data, people's home addresses, that's different than when we're dealing with, you know, NBC's headquarters.
Well, I'm just asking because, as I recall, your constituency is a non-commercial constituency, and I'm just looking at the who is for RedCross.org, for example, which is a non-commercial entity, and their registrant data is listed as American Red Cross, which I assume is not an individual.
Smaller non-commercial organizations do. We just had a member whose computers were all taken as part of some political act of sabotage in Latin America. I mean, it's his domain name data. It's his personal data that's in the domain name.
No, I understand that. There sometimes would be there, but your argument seems to be that because, you know, you've looked and seen that right now that data is mostly an individual's name, and that's the basis of the conclusion that this shouldn't be made available as part of the who is. I'm just pointing out there are a lot of non-commercial organization. I'm just looking at ACLU.org, for example, and their registrant name is ACLU, which I assume is American Civil Liberties Union, and it's not an individual. So there would be a lot of non-profit organizations, non-commercial organizations, for which that conclusion is not accurate. So I don't know if that would change the outcome as far as you're concerned, but I'm just trying to...
I don't think it would, because we found that our members are populating these fields with personal data.
Pardon me?
Not all of them, not the large organizations, but the smaller non-commercial organizations are certainly populating the technical, not the technical, the admin and the registrant with personal data.
Okay, any other questions for Kathy?
I don't really have a question. I just simply have a comment that I, noting the importance that the NCUC put on the Article 29 Working Party, I just want to make note that I would have a problem for the task force putting that same importance on that organization's views, since their own national governments completely ignore them when it comes to a variety of issues, such as data retention or law enforcement issues. So this notion that the Article 29 Working Party's opinions are the end-all, be-all when it comes to privacy, I think, are misguided.
And also that they're only advisory and not binding as a general rule.
Right. Good point.
Thanks. I think we have heard both sides of this particular discussion several times in the past.
But again, we're not hanging our while we find them persuasive and authoritative, the reasoning is not hung solely on the Article 29 Working Party. It is hung on the scope and mission of ICANN, and that it's the technical contact data that gives us the security stability type of function. It's the technical function that we really need in the who is data. The rest of it's for content purposes and for legal purposes.
Certainly. I want to make two quick notes before we move on. One I was supposed to do a while ago, and that's just to remind everyone But this call and all other WHOIS Task Force calls are being recorded, and the recording will be published on the GNSO website. So if you don't like that, hang up now.
Does that mean that the last half hour doesn't exist?
Yeah. Secondly, and hopefully you didn't say anything really bad during the first half. Secondly, I do want to note that although our terms of reference do instruct us to consider the purpose of WHOIS in the context of national and international laws, certainly we wouldn't base the view of global WHOIS policy on hopefully the view of any one particular jurisdiction with regards to its various legal framework. Registrars are next, and we don't have registries on the call right now anyways. Ross, do you care to share the views of the registrar constituency on this?
Sure. The purpose of three different contact types are obviously well bound up in the purpose of WHOIS itself. We set forth definitions on page, I believe it's page 9 of our submission. The purpose of the registrant contact is to provide a clear record of the entity that's responsible for a delegation, entity being defined as person or organization. The administrative contact, the purpose of that contact field or that contact type is to provide information, to provide contact information for an individual or a role, another way to say entity, that can provide assistance to third parties who have questions regarding the administration of the particular delegation. And the technical contact, its purpose is to provide information for an individual or role that can provide assistance to third parties who have questions regarding the technical management of the zone. Very simple, very straightforward.
Okay, thanks, Ross. Any questions for Ross?
Would you publish all three fields?
We do discuss that the... a lot of the information associated with the registrant type is extraneous information. It's not related to the, most of it's not related to the delegation itself, and therefore some or most of it could be removed from the WHOIS system. Similarly, the administrative technical billing and other end-user contacts are very, in practice, very closely related or have come to be over the years. As Steve points out, there's very little in the minds of end users that distinguish them from one another, so we could probably look at combining them or redefining those so that they're much more straightforward, provide relevant data without providing too much data. So we would seek to publish a subset of what is contained in that WHOIS today.
Who would control the rest of the subset?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Kathy.
If you publish a subset, would you consider the rest, the data that you don't publish, let's say you didn't publish registrant as WHOIS data, would you consider it still to be WHOIS data, or would it fall into some other category like billing data?
No, that would just fall into the bucket of business data at that point. Similar, the example you pointed out earlier, billing information, credit card information would be, that's where that data would fall, I think.
Thank you.
Let me ask one clarifying question, maybe for both Kathy and Ross. If it's the view of the NCC and/or the registrars that some of these contacts are not correctly part of the WHOIS data set, would it be the view that we ought not to define the terms at all, which is the approach the NCC took? If so, if an entity wanted to publish an additional set of WHOIS data, would that mean they wouldn't be able to? Like, if you wanted to list an admin contact, would that not be an option available to a registrant?
Yeah, from the standpoint of this document that we put forward here, Jordan, we tried to define the existing construct. Not that we necessarily agree with it 100%. There's a proposal that's contained in the latter half of this document that describes a new contact type that makes some of that publication more optional. For instance, combining the administrative technical contact into a what's called an operational point of contact, but allowing the registrant to specify multiple points of contact if they so desire, if it fits their operational model. So I think that allowing for current practice allows for registrars to publish additional information to the WHIS. I don't see any reason why we'd want to limit that practice. In fact, we may want to encourage registrars to extend that practice to end users, to allow end users to be a little bit more interactive with their records and what's contained in there.
Kathy, do you have a view on that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, and I'll refer, it's not addressed in our contacts document, but it is something that we've addressed on past occasions, where technically, if it's easy enough to allow, and I'll leave that as a question to the technical people, if it's easy enough to allow kind of choices and what information should, you know, people want to publish, we have always thought that registrants should be allowed to kind of opt in to include additional information. And that for those, particularly for businesses, that particular subset of businesses that's engaged in retail-type contact with end users, actually, you know, for sale to the public, which we don't think is everyone or even a fraction of everyone, they may well want, for additional credibility, they may well want to publish their address, to publish someone to contact for complaints from the public, that we really think that could add to, you know, Amazon or Kmart or anyone who's marketing to the broad public online. You know, they should be able to put in additional information, but that it should definitely be an opt-in type of function.
Right. So I guess my follow-up to that then, Kathy, is that NCUC has basically, by saying these particular types of contacts are not within the sort of purpose of who is, you've not really gone on to define them. And so I guess I'm wondering if registrants would be allowed to publish that additional information, and it doesn't wouldn't it still be valuable to have a definition of those, of what that means if they do so?
I think we've been working off the transfers definition.
Okay, so you're relatively content with the transfers framework, but you just have come to the conclusion that some of that information ought not to be necessarily included as part of the default who is set. Is that a fair summary?
Based on the transfers definition, are these technical fields? Are these fields that are used for technical purposes? That may be saying...
Right, and as a result, you've decided that you've come to the conclusion that they ought not to be published as part of the default set of who is
exactly.
Data. Okay. Any other questions for Ross? Do we have Ken back or anyone from the registry constituency? Okay, we won't talk about their views then. David, have you had a chance to take a look at the BC document?
Do this quickly. The register name holder we identify as the person responsible for the domain name registration and issues such as canceling and transferring a domain name. The technical contact is the person responsible for responding to and handling technical inquiries, and whoever the person is, they should be competent to handle those issues. And then the administrative contact should be responsible for content on the site, responsible to the registered name holder if the person isn't the if it isn't the same as the registered name holder. And in general, you know, we think it's important to clarify the information to be provided in these different categories and to call for consistent terminology.
Okay, thanks. Any questions for David? Go ahead.
David, did the business constituency discuss the difference that we've been talking about between individuals and companies? And anything about whether companies should be publishing fields that perhaps individuals shouldn't?
Actually, we think that both companies and individuals should provide the similar information because you can't discriminate as to whether it's a company perpetrating a phishing attack or an individual, et cetera.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Okay, this has been a very sort of introductory phase of this conversation. We're going to pick it up in future weeks, but it does seem that there's relatively, I think we're not that far apart on most of these definitions. I think the biggest gap I see is whether the admin contact ought to be responsible for content, which I think is a view expressed by both the BC and the IPC, and less so by other definitions. Maybe the ISPs as well. Did you, Maggie? I don't remember. Did you talk about content at all in your definitions? Maybe Maggie's away. Well, in any case, that does seem to be one distinction, and I think this notion that Ross pointed to earlier of whether the domain holder is responsible for other internet resources referred to by the domain in the IPC statement may be another sort of point of variance. But I think there is a good amount of common ground, and maybe we can. I'll take a stab, maybe identifying the places where there are convergence and divergence in order to set up a different set of questions on a future call.
Jordan, this is Steve. Could I just ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I know that that Maria posted on August 26th a compilation of the various constituency statements on this topic, as well as on the purpose of who is topic. But that's not a complete compilation, and she may have posted something more recently than that, which I've missed. But if not, and since we heard today from about the non-commercial position, which I know is posted separately, but and then we also heard today that there's a registrar position, which I know was posted in draft form. But perhaps if at some point Maria could pull all those together into one document, then we'd all have it. We'd have all that together for ease of reference.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful, and I think I would add that it would be helpful to create essentially some sort of side-by-side comparison of each of the various terms from each of the constituencies, because I think they are all bulleted out relatively conveniently in the text, so we could see them next to each other instead of having to run through the whole document to look at all the definitions of, say, technical contact.
Okay, the only other point I'd mention is, I posted on this a few days ago, which was that in some countries there may be laws that build on this in the sense of courts drawing legal conclusions from who is listed in certain ways. For example, a German court apparently has decided that the administrative contact for a domain name registration is legally responsible for spam that's emanating from that domain. So it's just another factor to keep in mind.
Thanks, Steve. I think that is a reason why it is important to define these terms, so it can be hopefully clear not only to registrants but to users of the Whois data as well what it's supposed to signify. Okay, with that, we're running somewhat over time, but I would like to move on to this the second half of our agenda, and we may have to cut the conversation a bit short and pick it up next week and trying to limit the length of this call, but I do want to start a discussion of a topic that Ross had raised and said that is important to try to answer, maybe as a predicate to making good progress on the purpose of who is. I'm starting to agree, I guess. And I think I'll summarize it, and Ross, correct me if I'm doing it fairly, but as whether the purpose of who is one that's essentially narrow in scope and focused on the specifically on the factors relating to the registration of the domain name, or one that's intended to be a broader sort of contact repository that provides contact information to resolve any sort of issues related to or the use of a domain name, regardless of whether it's related to the registration or not. Is that a fair summary, Ross?
Yes.
So specifically with regards to that question, I think there's two topics that we've touched on in recent weeks that I'd like to drill down on. And one is one that let me phrase it this way. As maybe a starting point for our discussion. I think last week we all agreed that pretty much everyone thinks that technical issues related to the domain name registration or delegation are definitely in the scope of the purpose of who is. And we also had discussion about whether or not we thought that the person responsible for resolving those sorts of technical issues would be the same as the person responsible for resolving other sorts of technical issues. And we didn't come to a conclusion on that question, but I think the answer was sort of, we'd probably end up would be maybe sometimes. But I guess my question is, if it's true that we think that there ought to be someone to contact for this specific type of technical issues related to the registration or delegation, and that's not always going to be the same person as would be responsible for a broader set of technical issues like spam or something like that. Does that mean that if we were to broaden the scope of who is beyond Ross's suggested limited scope, would we need additional sets of contacts within the who is?
I would characterize that slightly differently, Jordan. Just that last bit, in that Steve's proposal makes it very clear that it's not just additional contact types that would be needed, but additional data sets.
Yeah, actually, Steve's proposal actually is sort of the second half of the question I wanted to talk to you later today. But I guess I'm asking, to the extent we believe that sometimes there's going to be a distinction between who's responsible for technical issues related to the delegation and technical issues, other types of technical issues, if we think, and I guess this would be a question for those that embrace this broader purpose, we think that there is a broader purpose to who is, does that mean that we need to perhaps be able to list multiple types of technical contacts to resolve those different types of problems?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated question there, but I'll try. So if we believe that the purpose of who is, okay, if we believe that the purpose of who is definitely does incorporate technical issues related to the domain name registration and delegation, which I think we all agreed to on the last call, that is in the scope of the purpose of who is. So if that's true, that's in the scope, and if we also agree that sometimes the person that resolves those types of problems is not the same as of the person who resolves other types of technical issues, then does that imply that if the purpose of who is broader than just the technical delegation issues, that we would need additional types of technical contacts to resolve the other types of problems? So the bottom line is, if within a company, one person deals with, say, DNS issues and another person deals with spam issues, if we think the purpose of who is to address both DNS and spam issues, does that mean we need to have to list multiple contacts to deal with both those types of problems?
Well, Jordan, this is Steve.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think your premise of your question is that we're kind of looking at this really on a very granular level, and we need the person in Department 3A4 who handles spam, whereas the person in Department 3A6 handles, you know, phishing or something. I think the concept of a single point of contact, whether it's a single point for technical matters or a single point overall, is not necessarily that person can resolve it, but that person can put you in touch with the person who can resolve it, or that person knows who is the person to resolve it, and especially in a large organization, that might be true. So, in theory, you could have, who is could contain 10 technical contacts and 20 administrative contacts. They could all be defined in a very granular fashion, I guess, in theory. But the other way to do it is to have a definition, a much more high-level definition of what these contacts are supposed to do, and it would enable someone to get in touch with someone who could either address that problem or put them in touch with the person who can address that problem. So
I think
the answer to your question is not necessarily.
Right, so you're saying that you would think that regardless of what technical person was listed there, they would be acting as sort of a gateway to a broad set of technical...
Well,
purposes.
Yeah, I think if I understand your question correctly, I think that might be one answer. I mean, you know, is it feasible to have a system that's much more granular and where there's a lot more detail? I mean, I assume it's expansible, and there wouldn't be, you know, in theory, there might be a way to allow people to add more content on a more granular level.
Hi, it's Marilyn. Sorry I'm late.
Hi, Marilyn. Okay, Ross, you were going to comment, I think?
Yeah, I was, you know, I tend to agree with Steve on that more limited, the limited number of contacts. I think at a certain point it just gets goofy. You know, theoretically you could have 1,000 contact types returned as a result of a query, but whether or not that's useful or appropriate is a whole other ball of wax. But to the first question of, the broader purpose, I still struggle to understand how those supporting this broader purpose find that broader purpose as being remotely within our scope of capabilities. It's not something that the GNSO is responsible for. It's not something this task force is responsible for. And it was never intended at any point along the way that the WHOIS be used for these types of purposes. The fact that they are being used for these types of purposes, you know, I mentioned this in an earlier call, is similar to using a butter knife for a screwdriver. Yes, you can do it, but that doesn't mean that the butter knife manufacturers need to modify their tool to support your purpose. So I really don't understand how, we can enact policy that includes this broader purpose at any level.
Sure, understood, Russ. I guess what I'm trying to get at, it seems to me to a certain extent like we, at least when we're talking about purpose and whether it's broad or narrow, I think from a philosophical perspective, I think you've framed the debate to a certain extent there, Ross. But I think from a practical perspective, if what Steve's saying is correct, then mm-hmm. the fact that the purpose is to resolve a limited set of technical problems, there's still going to have to be some technical person listed there. And presumably, when you get in touch with that person, they could act as a gateway to the broader technical community within that company, regardless of whether the purpose of WHOIS was to narrow or broad. So the practical effect was probably the same guy would be listed either way. It would just be that we would have defined the purpose somewhat differently. Am I wrong? I mean, I'm wondering here, and I'm open to thoughts, but does the practical effect of defining, specifically when we're looking at technical issues, the purpose broadly or narrowly, do we think that's likely to change the data that appears and who is?
It's Marilyn. I think the question is asked, and the question, I think, may vary, Jordan, from company to company, but I think it's a good question to ask. Within a large company that has a diversity of business interests, such as my former employer or Max Consortius on the phone from UCI, I get different names that eventually and it may be because people have assigned responsibilities. In smaller companies or in individuals like my new business registers, you probably don't get different names. I don't think you can say it's a one size, it may not be, a one size fits all.
Yeah, no, I agree with that to a certain extent, Marilyn. But I guess if we were asking the question, if you were to list, mm-hmm. If you were to list one contact, and in scenario A, that contact was the person to resolve technical problems relating to the registration and delegation of a domain name, and in scenario two, it was list a technical person to resolve issues related to the domain name. Right. What would be? Do you think it's likely that a different person would be listed in those two scenarios?
They might be because technical people may be. I may delegate to a technical person to handle certain questions, But when we talk about questions related to the registration of a domain name, if we're talking, you know, companies who have built their entire business around a brand that is their, that they're using as their domain name, they may not be willing to delegate certain decisions to a technical manager. It, you know, it, we're asking ourselves, we're let me think about how I say this. We're trying to answer questions that I really think only some kind of a actual look at the data is going to tell us. Because, and I think, I'm sorry we rejected that idea earlier on the last call. I thought that had some merit to actually see if we could get a actual snapshot of what is in the, what's in the database, who lists it? And we're not going to get that by asking a few of the task force members to try to answer that question. That's not a valid way of gathering data.
Yeah, well, the problem is, I see there, Marilyn, is there's actually two distinct issues, right? There's A, what people are doing today, which I think is an issue that, well, there's some ways to approach that. And then B, if we had these two hypothetical definitions, what would you do? Is another question entirely.
But Jordan, this is Steve. Could I?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I think let's jump ahead here to implementation. Let's assume that we reach agreement and it's, you know, approved by the GNSO Council and the ICANN board about what is the purpose of these different contacts. Now, how is that, what is the significance of that agreement if it doesn't change or affect behavior? And the behavior here is the behavior of registrants who populate these data fields. And if we say the purpose of the registered, the technical contact is to do X, and how do the registrants know that's the case? Unless they do, it's not going to change their behavior. I mean, the Transfers Task Force came up with definitions for some of these things, and I bet most people, even within ICANN, didn't know about it, much less the average registrant. So I think what Marilyn is saying is we can't entirely divorce the question of what it ought to be from what it is now. And if we can find out more data, and I would be the first to say that what the IPC and BC did is totally insufficient and may even be doing it in the wrong way, but we were asked by this task force to try to find out how are these fields populated. And I still think that's an important question, because until we know that, it's going to be hard to know how we would ever possibly implement any conclusion we reach here.
I'm just
going to... But when I hear you guys say that, I hear... And let me kind of paraphrase that back, because I can't believe that this is what you're saying. We don't really understand how the current system is being used, but by understanding how that system is used, we can better implement a new system. So I'll ask that as a question. If that's not what you're saying, please let me know. But the extension of that is that if we don't know how the system is being used, we don't really understand how it's broken. So what are we seeking to change? Why are we seeking to change it in the first place if we don't understand how it's being used?
Well, let me try something here, Ross.
Please.
Agreeing to...
And that was an honest question. Like, it wasn't...
I understand.
I don't understand.
Look at this now. Agreeing to examine the need for changes in who is something that I believe the BC... I think my colleague David is on the phone.
I'm here.
And, I don't know, Sarah on the phone? The BC agreed some time ago to examine, to participate in an examination of who is, with the same goodwill that I think other groups agreed to examine, maybe with a different perspective, than perhaps some other group, is we think that the system really well, that in accuracy, system are a problem and should be addressed, that the data that is collected is generally needed for different purposes, such as resolving technical problems, resolving legal problems, causing business problems. We'd like to see the data improved in its accuracy. We want to understand the concerns of other constituencies and work productively towards what changes, if any, should be made. So when you say that we, you know, I think it's kind of like, why are we here? We're here because QIS, to us, is an incredibly important system overall, and we want to contribute to its effective use and any changes that are agreed to.
Not yet.
Now, as to whether we understand it, I think when I use the word we in that case, I mean broadly the task force. None of us are in-depth experts on any particular topic. That's not why we're on a task force. And gathering data, in my view, ought to be much more a function of every issues report and every task force in the future. But that's not where we are now. So given that we didn't have that when we went in, I think saying we ought to take a snapshot of what the realities are, not just what the opinions are, in order to inform our policy making, you know, let me put that out there again. It is a genuine view on my part, too, Ross.
Okay.
That's fair.
We do need to keep to our time commitments today. We do need to wrap this conversation up. I think what I'd like to suggest is the following. First, I think this question of – I think it would be helpful to have a better understanding of how the various data fields are populated today. I think we all agreed that when we originally asked the user constituencies to survey their members. I guess I'm what I'd like to see, hopefully, a discussion on the list about is what we think a good mechanism to accomplish that would be, other than the survey of the user constituency members. Given
Wait,
that,
I'm sorry, Jerome, but I'm going to have to throw my hands up in objection on this. I understand the need for data, but given that we're dealing with non-binding requirements at this point, those fields can be populated any which way that registrants see fit. There are no rules around this. We know that today. I strongly feel that's exactly what any data collection exercise is going to give us.
Well, okay. So,
Ross, they're not rules. I agree, but there may be patterns of what they're doing. That's what we would be trying to figure out.
So let me suggest, Ross, if you're gonna argue that we won't it won't be a fruitful endeavor to do anything other than what's already been done, I think that's a valid view. We don't have time to hash through it right now, but I think let's try to see if we can't have a discussion on the list about whether what sorts of data gathering activities, if any, might be useful.
Can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead briefly.
And what it's going to show us, looking at the raw data, what we have in the discussion here, having talked to our members, is what the data means. If you're just looking at kind of absolute fields, it's not going to tell you what that technical contact is doing underlying it. So why does collecting all this data really give us any more information?
Right. Well, that may be a question of methodology as opposed to, or what data you're collecting, as opposed to whether. You know, if you go and ask people what they put in the field and what they're using it for and who it is, you know, that's one approach and will yield one set of answers. And if you just go and look at what is already populated in there and try to interpret what it means, you know, you'll maybe get a different result. But in any case, that's why I'd like on the list to have a discussion of what approaches, if any, we think would be fruitful in pursuing this question. I'm not sure if there's an easy answer to this particular question, but I think it's worth discussion on the list. The second thing I'd like to propose, I'd like to pick up this conversation again a week from today, and start back on this topic. But I really would like some thought to go into. I'd like for us to think about two questions over the coming week, and I'll try to maybe email out some framing questions for this ongoing discussion. But essentially, to think about maybe we're not going to be able to come to conclusions about what the exact practical impact would be of a narrow definition versus a broad definition. But I think it is important to think about whether or not, if we think that a narrow purpose around, if we think at a minimum a purpose around technical issues for the delegation and registration of a name, if we think that's definitely included, how we can make sure that that purpose is served well regardless of what eventual definition and practices we come up with. And secondly, I think Steve and Ross touched on a topic earlier today that I think I'd like for us to think about and pick up again next week, and that is, if the registrant or the admin contact has responsibilities beyond the registration of a domain and to resources, whether it's web servers or content or voice over IP servers or some other types of resources referenced by the domain, how we demark what that area of responsibility is. So is it all the servers referenced by the zone file? Is it just the web server? Should we, as Ross suggested earlier, if we are going to go that route, maybe it requires a list of specific resources associated with the domain that would be, that the domain holder or the admin contact would be responsible for. I think we ought to have a discussion, if the purpose is broader, how we try to demark that.
Could I suggest an addition or a slightly different approach to that, Jordan?
Sure, go ahead, Ron.
Feel free to accept or not, but it may be more useful for us to get some sort of a draft proposal around that question rather than brainstorming one. I can't conceive of how that might possibly work. It's not my proposition. I don't back it, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time thinking about how it might work, but Steve or Marilyn or somebody wants to put the time in to describe what those additional data sets might look like, it might be more useful for us.
That's taking the assumption that additional data sets would be needed, which I think is the question.
Right, that's essentially the question I'm trying to answer. So,
okay, fair. All right.
So I'd like people to think about that question this week, and if you come to the conclusion that some additional data set might be useful, it may be productive to the conversation next week to come prepared with some answers on it. Like if you think that ultimately there is an additional data set that would be useful,
And when you say data set, you mean mandatory data set? Or any data set?
I'm open to proposals. I guess the question is, if there's a broader responsibility beyond just the domain name itself and the registration and delegation and DNS associated with the domain name, if the admin or the registrant, admin contact or the domain holder has a broader responsibility to other types of internet resources, how do we demark what those resources are?
Okay, thanks.
That's the other question I'd like for us to think about a little bit, and we'll talk about some next time. Okay, so we will have another call a week from today, and we'll once again, we ran a little bit over here, but we'll try to keep it to as close to an hour as possible. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.